Welcome to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. I'm Joey Roberts.
If you can't sleep at night, if you end up hating your life because, again, you're looking at everybody else in the big sellers and go, oh my gosh, look at these, you know, multi-million dollar exits. I want that income, but my comfort levels don't allow me to be as aggressive as I need to hit that, then maybe I need to take a look again internally. What do I want? Where do my comfort levels lie? Especially when you're starting, it's scary. Like I won't sugarcoat it. I empathize. It's terrifying.
Elizabeth Green, welcome to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. Elizabeth, you are so impressive, especially when it comes to setting goals. You co-founded Jungler, where you help Amazon sellers create effective ads. And you did this with your husband, and you also run a household with 6 children.
Yep, there's a lot of us.
I love it. Being goal-oriented, I view you as a goal digger. What is your mindset around setting goals, and how do you hit your goals?
That is a good question. So I think the longer I've dug into it, the more I've thought about it. In a lot of ways, it's uncovering what's really important to you, which seems like counterintuitive. Like goals seem like this lofty, like it's something I'm achieving, it's something I'm going for. Like you're like, yes, it's very much outside of yourself. It is yet to be attained. It is something you're working towards. So in a lot of ways, it's external. But what I've found in my life over the years is when I look too much at what other people are doing or what other people are achieving, or, you know, this is something that they've laid out for themselves, that, oh my gosh, that would be so amazing if I hit that. If I only start looking externally, I end up setting goals that I hate. And what that ends up doing is that ends up creating a life that, like, you're just like, I hate this. Why am I doing this? So I found, like, for me, and I'm like definitely work in progress. Like I don't know if I would consider myself super goal oriented. I try to be, but what I've found is that I really like looking externally for the how to's or to prove to myself that something is possible. Sometimes, like when you're out in left field, like the Elon Musk of doing things that like no one even considered humanly possible. For like the average, for the average housewife, it's very difficult for you to like even think that something like that is possible. And you end up like in this completely like black world spinning around, like, I don't even know which way is up. But if I'm looking externally, I'm like, okay, so they did it. So I know it's possible. So I almost look to them for like external motivators or ideas. I think the best ideas come from almost combining ideas from other places. That's where I think some of the most interesting and probably practical things sort of stem from. But a lot of it is like looking internally and deciding like what's important to you. So for me, like as much as I've been in this industry for, gosh, I think it's like going on 5 years now, I've never been to Prosper, which sounds ridiculous, probably.
Right.
But for me, what I finally realized is I like my home life. And if anyone asks me if I'm going to a conference, I'm like, heads up, I'm a notorious hermit. Like I love getting on these things. I love getting on podcasts. I love doing this. But I realized for me and just my goals, like I applaud anyone. And maybe at some point I'll realize that that is hurting me in business and I'm going to have to bite the bullet. And depending on what goals are more important to me, I'll just have to go out and do the thing I don't want to do. But for right now, I realized my home life and just the life I've set up and how I have with the kids, I like that. And for me, that's like, that's a super important thing. So I would not enjoy a life of jet setting or going to conferences and speaking at conferences. Although I look at those people who do that, I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you do that? That's amazing. That life seems amazing. Like actually, you know, getting to sleep in a hotel room and be able to just like have coffee with friends and there's no one like banging on the door yelling mommy. Like that part kind of sounds nice. But if I look at it in what I want for my life, that's not actually a goal that I want. So if I set that looking externally, I would end up creating a life that like I wouldn't enjoy. So I find it's again, it's like looking at what's possible and then reevaluating for yourself. Can I create a world in which one I enjoy, and can I have a goal that makes me excited, that I don't, the things that I'm sacrificing to achieve that are not going to be things that make me like hate my life. I'm willing to give them up. There's certain things that you're willing to give up, and there's certain things that you're not willing to give up. And just trying to do a lot of soul searching. And again, it's a work in progress.
It is a work in progress. And it sounds like you are looking at reaching your goals by cutting out a lot of noise and chaos for your business and your family life, running a household with six kids and running a business with your husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that's a lot of it. It's really about focus. I wish I knew where the quote was. It might have been from Layla Hormozi, who's amazing. If you're trying to look up like team and business development, like, oh my gosh, check her out.
She's great.
It was something about like, you don't, what was it? Like you're not trying to do like time saving activities because everybody only has so much time. And I'm butchering the quote. It was so much better than this. But like, you're trying to focus your time. It's more about focus than it is like trying to get more. It's like trying to direct it.
Right, for productivity, to get more out of an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Layla's really inspirational. The whole Hormozi social media is great. So everybody check them out. Follow them if you're not already. And with goal setting, when you and your husband co-founded Jungler, was that a goal? Like, hey, we want to start a business together?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good perspective on goal setting and trying to, you end up doing something that can achieve what it is that you're looking to do. So for us, when we got married, my husband's family's super entrepreneurial. I am not. Like, before this foray, I would have told you, like, I'm a facilitator. I don't get ahead of things. Like, that wasn't my comfort zone. So I've had to step out of my comfort zone, like, a lot. But when we got married, he ran a paintball field. So it was very much a weekend business. And, like, I helped him out behind the counter. And it was amazing. And the biggest thing was we were home together all the time. And then a couple years into our marriage, we ended up moving. He ended up going to work for somebody else. And for the first time in our marriage, he had a normal 9-to-5 job. And that's what everybody does. But I was like, well, this sucks. Because I've had a taste of the life where everything's together and everything's super intermingled. And I love that. And we always kind of knew we wanted that back. Now, I mean, it took us a while to figure out the avenue that was going to give us. But that was always in the back of my mind. And then we started having kids, and then it was like 2, 3, 4, and then we homeschool. So that takes up a portion, and, you know, like life just happened. And so really we started this business. We got into, you know, everyone's like, oh, how can I create income by working at home? So it was like, how do I create income working from the house? And that's how we came into the Amazon world, because there's a lot of sellers who that's what they're looking for. They're like, hey, I want to generate income while being able to work from home. So we worked through that. And then along that journey came to the agency and helping out with just a piece of what sellers, you know, as you know, the ad world has gotten like super complicated. So we started coming up in the time frame of when everyone was saying like, oh, do I need to run ads? And now everybody's like, how do you run ads? Because I got to figure this thing out. So it was very much in that, like, as kind of PPC was becoming more and more of like a thing, and people really needing help with that. So that ended up creating a really great avenue for us to, you know, create a business around that. But again, it was really born of, this is something that we want to achieve. We want to be able to have the entire family home. And like I was saying, I don't go anywhere. It's because my whole life, again, we homeschool. It's so integrated. Like, between my calls, days are crazy. I'll have 20 minutes here. I can walk out and I can watch my kids play and then come back down and sit down and like work. And it's phenomenal. And I love it. Then again, that's what I enjoy for my life. Other people might like time blocks, or this is, again, it's just what works for me. But this business, again, has given us something that, like, okay, this is what we want. And sometimes it's a little bit easier to figure out what you want and then figure out an avenue to get there versus, like, how do I get there? And you're trying to figure out the path. And I guess that's what I'm finding either in my personal life or as I analyze, like, a lot of our client accounts or things. I'm trying to start it from, okay, so what are you trying to do? Like, you want to tell me you want to target ACoS, you want to target Taco, like, why? And not in an insulting way, but like, why are those objectives? And often it's, oh, I want this profitability. Okay, so if that's the actual objective, can we look at the account in a way that will help you achieve that while being a little bit more flexible on these things? Because if we really analyze what we want, this is what we want, and this is actually stopping you from getting what you want. So maybe we need to pivot a little bit.
And it's challenging because this is all about money, right? I mean, that's what people want, is they're coming to you saying, I want to make money. And you're like, hey, we need to spend your money. Mm-hmm. And now the pressure is kind of on you to come up with the goal setting and the structure with your clients.
It is. It is. And it really has to be a back and forth. What I've realized, again, for myself or for clients, it's trying to read in between the lines of what it is that you talk the most about. I found that to be the best tell. So for instance, if we're talking with a client that they're like, I want sales. But so they say sales growth, but then 2 out of 3 times they're telling me they want profits. Most likely those goals are actually profit goals, which means probably total ACoS targets need to be a little bit lower, because it comes down to, I think, a lot of ways, yes, what do you want to achieve? Well, what are your comfort levels to get there? So on Amazon, we all know, like, if you're going to grow and expand, it's launching more products, it's, you know, having more ad spend, it's probably leaning out a little bit on your profit margins to be able to hit that growth. But if that, again, terrifies you, if you can't sleep at night, if you end up hating your life because, again, you're looking at everybody else and the big sellers and go, oh my gosh, look at these, you know, multi-million dollar exits. I want that income, but my comfort levels don't allow me to be as aggressive as I need to hit that. Then maybe I need to take a look again internally. What do I want? Where do my comfort levels lie? Just like me saying, right now, I don't want to go to conferences. I want to, but like, the give up is more than my comfort levels are. So that's just, am I losing out on business? Am I losing out on being seen as someone in the industry who's able to speak at conferences? Yes. But for me, again, my comfort levels, I'm willing to give that up. And so if you're not willing to give it up, but you're on a path that's going to require you to give it up, what you're going to end up doing is you're going to go halfway. So you're going to give up more than you want to and not end up achieving what it is that you've in your mind is ultimately what you want. You're going to end up going again, spending a little more and then be like, oh crap. And then you're going to pull back and then you'll be like, oh no, I need to do more. And then you're going to pull back and you're going to end up in this like really stuck cycle that doesn't get you anywhere. Instead of just like, okay, this is what I want. This is my comfort level. Let's map out something that's going to get you there instead of, you know, just this whole like, do I want it? Do I not want it? Like, try and look internally a little bit.
Exactly. And when you are spending money on ads on Amazon, especially when you're launching a new product, you can't predict the outcome.
Yeah.
And so what do you say to people when either a new seller launching a product who comes to you to run ads, or perhaps somebody who has a brand and now they're launching a new product and they come to you and really they do want profit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what's your advice? What do you tell them?
Yeah. For me, it starts with comfort levels. I try and really, and sometimes what I find is budget. I have to ask. Yeah. So budget, and profit margins. So there's a couple things I gauge on is I don't want to say what you're comfortable losing, because it shouldn't all be at a loss, but you need to see that as like a launch investment. I was listening, I think, to another podcast, and I wish I could remember who exactly said it, but they were saying like, you know, people used to like do giveaways, right? You know, they used to just like give away product and all this money. And then that was technically at a loss. Now you're gaining reviews and you're gaining ranking, but it was seen, I don't know if it was because it was seen as more of a sure thing to be able to rank, possibly that's why, but they're like, they used to, you know, just say, this is at a loss and this is what I'm going to have to invest into my ranking, where now when not all sellers, Some of the larger brands, most larger brands actually see it as an investment. But sometimes, especially when you're starting, it's scary. Like I won't sugarcoat it. I empathize. It's terrifying. But you have to kind of see it as an initial investment. So my goal in the beginning with any launch, part of it is going to be vetting the product. As much as you want to see a return from the ads, and you should, what we do, we always double, triple, quadruple down on where is your exact market searching on the platform. Like people talk about highly relevant keywords, you know, targeting your exact market. A good rule of thumb is like if you're targeting a keyword, go and search on Amazon, what shows up on that search page, and does your product fit there? Can you kind of guess that it's going to resonate with that target market because you kind of fit into what that shopper is obviously searching for? So if we can put the products in front of the exact shoppers, yes. Do we want to see a return? You should see a return. Like if you're targeting your exact market and they're not buying, that's obviously some sort of issue with the conversion rate. And it could be the beginning, you know, you could be figuring out price point. Obviously you're going to have no reviews in the beginning. So that's going to play into your conversion rates, which is going to make a cost higher, like all of those things. But at the very least, you want to know, like, is my target market going to buy my product? And I think sometimes people think about launch, like, oh, I need to get sales. Yes, you want to get sales. But if you're not getting sales, that actually is it's a good thing to find out in the beginning before you throw a whole bunch of money behind your ads. Like if I'm going to target my exact existing shoppers that I know should be clamoring for my product because they are searching my exact thing on Amazon, do they want it? And you can, in the beginning, if you approach it like that, like almost like a curious test, then you can never fully take emotion out of a launch. Like me as like the advertiser, like I'm emotionally invested in your product as well. I can't even imagine what the brand owners are thinking. But if you can look at it as, okay, how does the market react? You know, what is my click-through rates? When they're seeing it, is it resonating enough they want to know more? And when they find out more, are they actually purchasing the product? If you approach it like that, then you can kind of start looking at it at the shopper funnel, because that's a really, I mean, if we go outside of the Amazon world, like people talk about shopper funnels all the time, right? You get eyeballs, you get people to click, and then you get people to buy. Where's the disconnect? And you can absolutely see that in the ads when you analyze the data. And then again, providing your targeting's correct, then you can kind of analyze that and be like, okay, so this is where I think there's a disconnect. Like if I have a really poor click-through rate, again, it could be reviews, it could be price point. You need to account for those things. But if you have decent reviews and you're still getting really terrible click-through rates high up on your main keywords, well, then maybe there's something to evaluate with the main image or something on that initial listing that's not resonating with the market. If you can fix that, you can get more people into your funnel onto the listing. Okay, great. So now they're on the listing. We're getting a higher influx into the listing. Is that market resonating? Are they buying? Yes or no? No, then maybe we know we need to fix something on the listing page or with that offer. And so you, again, if you approach it in that sense, it makes it a lot easier to see the issues that need to be fixed and be able to fix them versus looking at it, running it, saying, oh my gosh, my ACoS is too high, I can't do that. Instead of just saying, oh, ACoS is too high, we need to fix it, say ACoS is too high, why? And then that gives you a much better idea of where and what needs to be fixed instead of just throwing up your hands and going, oh my gosh, it doesn't work.
Yeah, you have to look at the whole approach. And I like how you just brought up that it is emotional. And people, sellers, and I may have thought this way too when I started selling, I can't exactly remember, but there's so much pressure on the ads to perform. And really, it's because the ads are the least emotional part, and the emotion is in your product and your photography. Yeah. And if you get a bad review, it cuts so deep.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking. I know there's those times where you're climbing up in the ranking and all of a sudden you get hit with the one star because somebody had a bad day and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, conversion rates, it's a tough battle. It can get very emotional.
Yes, and so much pressure runs on the advertising. And also, you know, I coach a lot of sellers, and PPC Amazon ads are always the first thing people want to outsource. And I applaud that. I get that. You want to learn it yourself, but then it puts even more pressure on an agency and you to perform. So it's great to hear you come back and say, well, we have to look at the full picture and have those tough conversations with clients.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of the things that I've been digging into a lot, and this is completely outside of the ads, because there's most things that sellers are looking for from me, obviously, is to run good ads. Like, we need to hit KPIs. We need to make sure that the business is profitable. Like, all those things are super important. But a lot of the, I think the harder questions I get asked is the why question. Like, something happened, why did it? Because we're in the data all the time. Like, yes, we're looking at the ads performance, but we're also looking at total sale performance. We're looking at total sessions, because there's so many things that touch ads. So we need to know kind of how the entire ecosystem works to be able to run like really effective ads. So I've been digging into a lot, like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? And I think the brands that I find the best partnership with them are ones who fully trust me to run their ads. They know that we're being as efficient as possible. We have their best interest at heart. And then what we do and what I coach my team on all the time, like, we just sent off an email today, is if we can understand the brand's goals, if we thoroughly understand what it is that they're trying to achieve, or what is, again, where their comfort levels are, where they're most invested, then we can be a better advocate for them on their ad strategy. So, for instance, we have a brand that we're managing. We have a 25% ACOS target. Total ACOS targets, I think, are like 15%, maybe 12%. And what we found is we kept optimizing down for 25% ACOS, and we kept seeing market share drop. Total sales drop, market share drops. So what we could do is we could say, okay, well, this is our KPI. All we have is a total ACOS target and an ACOS target. And as long as we're hitting these targets, like, we're doing our job, which in essence could be true. But for me, as somebody who's, again, heavily invested in this brand, and every time I've talked to this brand owner, it's been anytime there's a sales dip, they reach out, or anytime we're in a conversation, it's like, can we push this thing more? So I'm like, obviously sales are very important to you, and sales are important to me because I want your brand to survive. So we shot off an email and said, hey,
you're listening to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. If you like what you're hearing, click the subscribe button. We have new content coming out all the time, and you don't want to miss out.
Hey, you know, we're optimizing for this target. We're noticing every time we do this, it brings down your market share. We can continue to optimize for this target. Or if you would be okay with us pushing this to a 30 or 35%, we would be able to maintain your market share because we run those numbers. And then we obviously will make sure that we keep to achieve the total ACOS objective, so you're still profitable. But that would, if as long as you're willing to be flexible. And to me, it's not, we were talking, we had an internal meeting before we sent off the email, and the brand manager was saying, like, well, I would, you know, I think this would be really great. I said, well, let's ask the client. Like, I'm not going to make an executive decision to change your KPIs. Like, that's not my job. If you give me a KPI, that needs to be important. But can we have a conversation around how I think this KPI may be hurting you. And if we adjust it a little bit and still make sure that you're profitable, I think your brand would be healthier overall. But I couldn't know that, or I couldn't make that decision to reach out if I didn't know and recognize that, like, sales are super important to sellers, or you want to maintain your market share. So again, it's like looking at the whole ecosystem and saying, how do ads touch everything? And how can I navigate ads, or at least give you information that allows you to make better decisions as a brand and not have to worry about run the ads, but still have some sort of influence as to how the ads are run.
And have those honest conversations. And that goes back to trust.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a lot of trust on both sides.
I love that approach with the KPI. So let's talk about keyword research. Now that I have, like, your mind here and we can dig into Amazon advertising, I love to geek out on this topic, and it's so important. So yeah, let's talk about the your approach with Jungler around keyword research for advertising.
Yeah. So my at least how I do it. I know some of my team has like other methods, and we try and combine, you know, just look at the entire marketplace, because you can look at, you know, like there's Selenium 10, and then there's Jungle Scout, and there's search query performance dashboards, and there's brand analytics, and there's a lot of tools that like marry all of those together, and it's great. And you want to get like, you know, you kind of like your master list somehow compiled of all the possible keywords that you could possibly target in your market. It's kind of where I start. Like, where do I get my master list? And then what I like to do is I like to get a gauge of, one, kind of what the market share looks like. So that would be search volume. And then I like to get a gauge for, again, my brand's comfort levels. And then where do I think I should make inroads into the market based on my brand's budget and based on my brand's, again, comfort levels. Like how hot do they want to come out of the gate? Some brands are like, hey, let's push it to the top now. Like, highest keyword, let's go. Ad spend doesn't matter. I mean, it matters, but some brands are like, yeah, let's go. And there's other brands who are like, yeah, I need to worry about reorders, and I need to be more profitable, and we probably want to, you know, my budget's not as big. And I'm like, that's, I can work with either. I just need to know what I'm working with. So my favorite thing to do when I am analyzing master keyword list, the first thing I like to find is what I personally call, I don't even know if my team calls it this, but I call it my highest search volume, highest relevant keyword. So my thought is, where would I fit into this market? What's my shooting star keyword look like? Like, for instance, if you're selling, you know, like maybe you're selling a baby romper or something, your highest keyword is probably not baby clothes. Like that's a super broad. Maybe you'll keep that in the back pocket, but like, that's not where I'm searching. So I'm sorting that list and I'm saying, where does that search page become relevant enough to my product that I could see it fitting and ranking here? Like, I can see us getting there. And then I just like to take a look at what that is. And that will also kind of gauge for you, like, your market cap. So if you're going down that list and you're like, yeah, these aren't relevant, and you get all the way down and like your highest volume keywords are around like only the couple thousand search range, or like you're looking at keywords that are only make maybe 500, you know that market, or at least the shopper market, is not all that big. So you know you're playing in a much smaller pond. Sometimes that can be good. And then sometimes if there's a lot of sellers playing in a really small pond, that can be like really cutthroat. But I just want to know where that is. Let's look at the search volume. For some accounts, that search volume is going to be in like 100,000, 50,000 search volume. So I know like there's some big things we could go after. Does it make sense for us to go after it now? And that really determines on the budget and kind of what the sales volume is for those top products. And you can kind of maybe do some really, really rough math on like, how much would I have to sell to get here? What do those conversion rates kind of look like? What does that page really look like? And then you can say, do I have the budget? Do I think I can compete in that market right now? Yes or no. And then you kind of filter down to, again, where that high relevancy is and where you think you have the budget to compete. And that's where you start in the market. And so that's kind of my general method.
You make it sound so simple. let's talk a little bit about search volume. So for me, I guess personally as a seller, I find my sweet spot search volume is like 30,000 to 40,000. Like when I'm looking, I mean, that's kind of when I'm doing like product research or I'm looking at my products. Like what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I would say that's good. That would be a good, healthy market. The other thing that I really like to look for is the depth of keywords. So for instance, if you had a market where you said, okay, so my main keyword is 30,000, 40,000, but then every other relevant keyword under that was like 300 search volume, you would say, I know the entire market's going to be going after that one keyword. And unless I can rank on that one keyword, I'm just not going to make good volume of sales. So if I can find depth in the market, and a lot of times when you have those super competitive markets, you can find such depth of keywords that you find a place that you can like make inroads into the market. Again, versus those ones where you have like a couple keywords that you know everybody's competing on, those ones can be again kind of cutthroat sometimes.
Especially if there's, you know, significant amount of sellers. If you're only going after 30,000 and there's only like four players who have decent listings and are getting sales,
then you have room.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. And there's so much keyword opportunity with the ads as far as, let's just talk about like maybe a pink trash can, right? Mm-hmm. Where pink trash cans might show up, but the keyword pink might come with trash can pink or whatever to be a good opportunity. And then you can win with advertising.
Yeah, absolutely. And this gets into my other thing that I really preach a lot. And people do it. It's almost impossible to do it at scale immediately. You can build it out. It takes time, especially in really messy accounts, is connecting, especially when you're talking variation listings. I don't know how. We ended up managing several large clothing brands. It's like variations. It's a nightmare. My brand manager is too wonderful. We definitely went through like trial by fire trying to like figure out how to manage all of it. But it's trying to connect the relevant variations to the relevant search terms. Like you were talking about pink trash can. So if you had a listing with say like a purple, maybe you're targeting like, you know, women's office decor or something. So you have like your pink one and your purple one and maybe a teal one or something. If you can target your pink variation trash can on the pink keyword, like you're doing your best. Again, like I was telling you, targeting relevant keywords. You're doing your best to target the relevant product to the shopper that's searching for said product. That's really what ads are doing. You're trying to show up at the right place with the exact person searching at a place where they can actually find it. So your bid needs to be good enough that you can show up there. And ideally, again, if that's something that resonates with them, they're going to make the purchase. But again, you're really trying to target the shopper exactly where they are with exactly what they want. So if you can build that out, again, that funnel. So if you have like a pants variation and one's red, one's black, where are my red keywords? Where are my black keywords? Where are my gray keywords? How can I segment? And like, I wish there was a software that could do that. I wish you could just like, it would just like automatically target everything. And the thing is like, you could try. And like, I know a lot of people, what they'll do is they'll segment their variations to each have like their own ad group or their own campaign and then say, okay, these are the search terms that are converting under that one. So therefore I will, you know, I can assume that all of these search terms resonate with this shopper. That kind of works. But the way Amazon works is whatever product got the click is the one that gets attributed the sale. Which makes sense because we've had funnels before. Well, technically the black one sold the best, but the orange one was the one that like drove ads. And when we put in the black one, the orange one was the one that like just got all the clicks and it was the funnel. But if you went and looked at the business reports, the orange one did garbage in sales, but it was the one that absolutely crushed it from an ads perspective. So you will end up with those nuances. So it makes sense the way that they've attributed the sales on the ad side. That being said, that means that they could have clicked on the black one. And even though the black one was the only one you had in the ad group, the only one you were advertising, it might have converted on, say, red pants because that search term showed up, but it was because they actually bought the red one. But you're seeing that in the black, you know, when you segment the black search term. So you'll end up with those nuances. So honestly, the best way to do it is manual, which is kind of painful. But
so then you make ad campaigns for every specific style or color or basically the variation. And yeah, that's tedious, but then you also have a really close watch on how everything's performing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times you'll find those when you're doing your keyword research in the beginning for a launch. So if I'm doing a research and I'm seeing segments of black, 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 I'm like, oh, okay, let me group these. Let me pull out that variation and let me target it. So I definitely like, if we can identify those in the beginning, we'll start making funnels immediately around those.
I like that approach. I think that's the approach kind of at AMZ Insiders that we value is really taking the time to build out separate campaigns, knowing what each of your variations are. What about negative keywords? So I am an impatient person. And sometimes when I start running ad campaigns and I see a word that is costing me money and it hasn't converted, and I'm talking like within the first week, like 5-7 days, I'm so tempted to make it a negative keyword. And then the issue for me is if I make it a negative keyword, I may never think about it again. So I hesitate. Yeah. Like, when do you make it a negative?
Yeah. So I have if then kind of, I have like my general best practice and then I have my exception. So my general best practice is I don't tend to negate things unless they are highly relevant to the product. You know, for instance, we had like a product that was like around a baby blanket and the keyword kept coming up like baby stroller. It never converted. It's never going to convert. Like, it's not a stroller. That one I could, without doubt, add as a negative and be perfectly okay with that and know that I'm not missing out on any market share. But if it was something that was like maybe kind of not converting, I would prefer to control things at the bid level. Again, providing like you're retargeting search terms that converted and you're doing other best practices to make sure that you're not going to like lose out if you're like lowering things. So that's my like general best practice. I will say, if you have very limited budgets or you're super profit conscious, I will oftentimes in the beginning when... you'll oftentimes see this in like autos or broad match campaigns. Like, it will start targeting. Remember when I was talking about like, you know, you have a baby romper and you target like baby clothing. You might see that search term keep popping up. And because it's so high volume and because Amazon's like, you are baby clothing, they just keep hitting you on that search page. And you see so much ad spend. And oftentimes where this can be very difficult for sellers is when there are sales on that keyword and they're like, so they cost is like really high and I know I can't compete on it, but I am making sales on it. So you're like, you're really like struggling. Like, I know it's relevant, but should I add as a negative? So what I say in those cases, if you don't mind waiting things out and just controlling at a bid, do that. But if you're dealing with very limited budgets or you're super profit conscious, I would, again, go back to goals and say, I know I can't compete on this. I know I don't have the budget to compete on this. So I'm not going to gain any residual ranking because that's just not my target right now. I can't even compete. I'm not going to compete on this. So I'll add it as a negative only because I want to reallocate that ad spend elsewhere. So if you're thinking of it from like an ad spend reallocation and you're like, I have very limited ad spend, I need to be savvy with it, then I might go and add it as a negative. But for the most part, again, most times I only go for irrelevancy. There's like that special use case that I have added negatives.
Great explanation. I love it. That's very helpful. And when we're talking about just all of advertising approach as a whole, like, mm-hmm. overarching, like, what do you think it takes to just be a successful Amazon seller? Like, just outside looking in, with you get to work with so many brands, like, what is it that you see that makes a successful seller?
That's a good question. I would say overarchingly, it's the ones who do not get emotionally tied and are able to objectively look at the data. Because if you're emotional, and again, I sympathize that this is not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying it's how you're going to make the best decisions. If you're, for instance, emotionally tied to a keyword, let's put it in the ads perspective, right? If you advertise on those highly relevant keywords and you're not converting and you're getting 15 clicks, 25 clicks, 50 clicks, you haven't converted, your emotion is going to say, why are people not buying? This is exactly my product. This is exactly my keyword. Like, something is not working. And it's, you're so emotionally invested, you won't recognize that maybe there's something with your offer or you, versus looking back and saying, why is this not converting? This is my target market. And like I was saying, getting curious, conversion rates, click-through rates. Again, maybe just recognizing your review count isn't enough to play in that playground right now. Like, looking at things. So really savvy brand owners will take a look at their entire catalog and really do that analysis. And the other thing that I find that brand owners will do is, at some level, as your catalog grows, you really need to 80-20 it. And I'm not saying like ignore the rest of your catalog. I'm not saying don't do general best practices. But what I am saying is, if something has a poor conversion rate, so you don't have high sales, One of my favorite things to do is percentages of total. Percentage of total sales, percentage of total attributed profits is a really good one to do. If you have a P&L that can break it down on a SKU level or even like a listing level, go in, say, okay, what is my highest like sales divided by total sales or profit attribution divided by total profit attribution? What of these is adding to my top line and which of these is adding to my bottom line? And if you can say you notice that your highest sale product, the one that's generating all the sales in your account, is not attributing well to your profits. If you can move up profits on your highest sale item, think of what an impact that's going to do to your bottom line. It's going to be astronomical. Versus if you go to the one that's getting like 500 sales a month, you're like, oh my gosh, this thing isn't moving. And you're like, what if I could just like increase these sales a little bit? Maybe you get an extra $50. Maybe you can move it up. Maybe even if you double it, it's $1,000 a month. Like, how much is that adding to a very large account that's doing, you know, hundreds of thousands, even millions? Like, it's going to be very incremental. So when things get so big that you can't wrap your brain around it, you want to look at, again, what is my goal? So my goal is just profits. I look at everything and I say, okay, so what's going to make the biggest impact on my profits? And what's going to be the easiest for me to make an impact on the profits? So if you have, again, your top product that is not as profitable as you want, where is the issue? Is it because my total A cost is high? Okay, so why is total A cost high? Maybe it's a conversion rate. You can actually do the math on your sessions. If you do, what is it? Sessions multiplied by conversion rates tells you how many orders you would get. You can do that math and say, if I bump my conversion rate 0.5, 1 point, which is not easy, I'll grant you. Optimizing a listing to bump a conversion rate even incrementally is a difficult task. I would go get a professional. But if you say, what if I just bump this? What does that do to my sales volume? If you're getting a high volume of sessions, that sales increase is probably going to surprise you how little a bump you have to make to be able to make that impact. So it's looking into things on like a very macro level and then saying, okay, so what am I trying to move towards? What's the easiest lever for me to pull? Let me do that instead of trying to do these other 20 things that in the end are going to make a marginal difference.
That's great advice. And I feel we kind of came full circle to the beginning when and we just kind of wrapped a bow on all of it, because it is really that 80-20 rule. And we started off talking about structure and only do the things that serve you and drop the things that don't. And that completely applies to exactly that advice. So thank you. That was really good advice. So in 2023, all this AI stuff is big. And at AMZ Insiders, we're using AI to help sellers and new sellers boost sales for Amazon. How is this impacting the ad world?
Yeah. So the biggest thing probably impacting is definitely any sales copy you have. So that would equate to headlines like sponsor brand, sponsor display. I actually think I put a video out how to use ChatGPT to do that with a prompt. So that's been kind of interesting. We're using that. I would say that's really going to be the biggest impact. I do find it very intriguing how, because AI, or what has been touted as AI, has technically been in the Amazon ad world for a little while. Like, you hear about all the tools like, oh, we run AI off bits. And that's really, I think, where everyone thought AI was going to go. Like, it's going to replace the mathematics. It's going to replace my Excel. It's going to replace the spreadsheets, and it's going to calculate all the data and do all the stuff for us. But what we're finding with like ChatGPT or a lot of the models that come out, they're creative language models. They're actually replacing the creative tasks more than they are like the data analytics tasks, which is like mind-boggling to me. It's insane. So from an ads perspective, there's some interesting things I've wondered about digging into. Like, for instance, there are, you know, AI software out there. I don't, the unit economics haven't been enough that I would really look into it. I think as it scales and more people do it, maybe it'll become easier for me to look into, on like generating video creatives using AI or generating visual creatives using AI, because there's a lot of our brands who, like one of the brands we're working through, they're like, we have creatives, we have an entire creative team, like where do we need to focus in? You know, because there's all these things we could be doing. Again, 80-20, like there's all these things we could be doing. Can you help us like figure out what we need? So we're feeding them, okay, these things, we could use these creatives, we need this stuff, and they're funneling it back to us. But what if the brand manager could be like, oh, I need to go create a video ad, instead of us saying like, hey, can you create a video ad creative? Let me, I'll just go make one for you. And there are video ad creators or generators inside of the ad console that is available. If you didn't know it, you can actually go generate an ad just using still images, but it's a slideshow. So I'm kind of interested to see where that goes as far as the impact on ads. Amazon is moving in a more creative direction. So how we'll end up mirroring that with AI, I don't know, but I'm excited.
I'm excited too, and I'm very excited for AI with the development of video and photography. So I'm hoping that through 2023, we can have front row seats to watching all of that develop and then start utilizing it, because there's definitely very much excitement around it. Well, thank you for spending this time with us. Is there anything else that you would like to let me know about, tell our audience about before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I think we did a really good job covering it. Hopefully the audience found it useful.
Yes, I think so. I love digging into all the technical parts of the ads, but then also the clarity that you gave around it and kind of putting it into simple terms. And I'll definitely have links of how everybody can reach out to you at Jungler. And until next time, stay fearless.
Yeah, thanks.
If you're looking to get started selling on Amazon, or maybe need some help with your current sales on Amazon, go to fearlesssellers.com. That's a lot of S's in there. fearlesssellers.com. Use coupon code FEARLESS for 50% off our next event. Thank you for listening to the Fearless Sellers, the Women of Amazon podcast. Until next time, stay fearless.